Thank you, everybody, for being here. Today I'm talking about the mathematical modeling of HIV viral dynamics when patients interrupt their treatment. I have no relationship to disclose. The objective of this study is to understand HIV viral dynamics and immune response at the individual level and to analyze the impact of the antiretroviral treatment interruption and its impact on the HIV prognosis, and how can we provide a better HIV treatment regimen. So as you may all know that there are more than 35 million people are living with HIV, and it was a good news for me that compared to the 2013, the number of people who died because of HIV were less. In 2013, it was 1.5 million, and last year it was 2 million, and it increased the number of people who are living with HIV. To give you a brief overview of the HIV course of infection over time, when a person gets infected with HIV, they experience an acute stage, which lasts for a couple months. And then patients go through the asymptomatic stage. What we see in the acute stage is the sudden decrease in the CD4 T cell counts of the patients, and then we see an asymptomatic stage in which we see decrease in the CD4 T cell counts, but the gradual decrease, not like what we see at the acute stage. And over time, they will lose their CD4 T cell counts, and there we see increase in the viral load, and eventually their T cell counts go under 200 cells per microliter, and then we say patient is at the eighth stage. There are treatments available for the HIV. There are, of course, lots of benefits on that, and one of the most important benefit that I think is important is that treatment acts as a prevention. So when patient gets treatment, they not only save themselves, but they only prevent the HIV transmission in the community and the population. But patients who get treatment experiences some problems like drug resistance, toxicity. They get tired of getting treatment every day, and since they get tired, they cannot be adherent enough. In some areas, patients have experienced high-cost problems, and also sometimes the social life got impacted by the getting HIV treatment. And different studies show that 6 to 51% of the HIV-positive patients may interrupt their treatment over the course of infection, and the reasons for that are different. They get tired of getting treatment, they travel, or they experience some adverse effects, and sometimes for patients who start treatment early, they just feel well, they don't see any symptoms of AIDS, and then they will interrupt their treatment because they feel well. So there have been some different reasons for patients to interrupt their treatment, like to provide, to let the wild type strains of the HIV to reemerge, but also if they interrupt the treatment, they may experience the viral rebound, which increases the person-to-person transmission and also the risk of opportunistic co-infection. During 2000s, there were some clinical studies that were studying the impact of the treatment interruption, if it is suitable to put patients on treatment for a short period of time to let them recover from the adverse effects of the treatment. Some of them cut short because of the increase in the mortality of the patients on this study, but some others reported no difference between the health outcomes of the HIV-positive patients who interrupted the treatment and who didn't interrupt the treatment. So we don't have any good explanation for why we see different clinical outcomes on previous studies that try to understand the impacts of the HIV treatment interruption. So we recommend using mathematical models to help the clinical trial designers to provide a better threshold for the CD4 T cell counts and better treatment protocols and regimens. So what we used we developed a mathematical model that showed the whole course of the HIV. Most math models provide the course of HIV over the acute stage and asymptomatic stage, but they cannot show what happens when patient goes through the AIDS stage. So what we did, we used two most important target cells for the HIV, the CD4 plus T cell counts, which is responsible basically, which is the main target of the HIV, and also macrophages, which studies shows that they can be more responsible for the later stages of the HIV. So once the T cells get infected, they will, a proportion of them get latently infected. They don't produce any viruses, but another proportion get activated and then produce viruses. Also, the latent cells got activated and produced viruses. We assumed the birth rate, the reproduction rate for the T cells from the thymus and bone marrow, and also the death rate for uninfected cells, latently infected cells, and also infected cells, which changes based on their status. When once the activated infected cells produce viruses, we see increase in the number of the viral load. We have the same story here for the macrophages too. They got infected. Some of them go to the latent period. Others actively produce viruses. And then once they produce viruses, we see increase in the viral load. Also, we have the clearance rate for the virus and reproduction rate and death rate for the macrophages. This is a mathematical model which is based on this diagram that you see that has the uninfected cells, latently infected cells, and actively infected cells, and also viruses, their production and also clearance of the viruses. So when we run the simulation with this math model that we have, we had success in providing in showing the whole course of the HIV infection. And as you remember on the other slide, what we show was that patients go through the acute stage and then go through the asymptomatic stage, in which we see gradual decrease in the viral load and eventually the AIDS stage and losing their T cell counts if they don't get any treatment. Then we apply treatment on these patients. We combined three forms of the treatment, the fusion inhibitors that block the entrance to the target cells, reverse transcriptase inhibitor that block the reverse transcription of the HIV RNA, and also integrase inhibitor that doesn't let the HIV DNA get integrated to the DNA of the target cells. Also, we have the protease inhibitor, which doesn't let the viruses get mature and be infectious and infect other cells. So what we did was that we used protease inhibitor that decreased the number of new infected cells, and we combined the fusion inhibitor, reverse transcriptase inhibitor, and integrase inhibitor we applied them in reduction on the infectious rate of the HIV. Also, we assumed different efficacy for the treatment on T cell counts and macrophages. Then we started to fit the parameters of our model to make sure that our model is the good representation of the real world for the treatment naive patient. So we used the data that was gathered in the London, and this data get patients who are acutely infected with the HIV and then provide them, offer them HIV treatment, but the subject of this study decided not to get treatment during acute and early stages of the disease. And then the study subjects came to the clinic, and their CD4 T cells counts and viral load was measured over time. So we calibrated the model with the real data. This is the one patient's data that started came into the study in 2000 and then were treatment naive until 2003. And this is another patient's data that has been used as a test patient to see if the model is a good fit for that patient too. After making sure that this model is a good representation of the real patients, we designed three different treatment interruption scenarios. In the first scenario, we studied the indefinite interruption. And it works in a way that patients start the treatment and then they interrupt the treatment forever and don't come back on treatment. The second one was the periodic treatment interruption, in which patients interrupt their treatment for a couple of months. I mean, it depends on the scenario, and then they come back to the treatment and then interrupt the treatment and then come back to treatment. And the third study that we did was that how low adherence impacts the progression of the HIV to the AIDS, like skipping one dose of treatment every other day, every 3 day, every 4 day, and so on. And then we ran the simulation for different scenarios for each treatment interruption condition. So for a patient who is on treatment and then interrupt their treatment forever, we assume that what happens when patient start their treatment early versus late. For example, the red line that you see here is for the patient that started treatment 1,000 days after got infected and then was on treatment for 1 year and then interrupted treatment forever. As you see that the time it takes for that patient to get to the AIDS stage is much shorter compared to the patients who started treatment 1,000 days after getting infected, exactly the same as the previous patient, but were on treatment for 2.5 years and then interrupted the treatment. And what we see here is that for patients who started treatment earlier, it takes much longer for them to go to the AIDS stage if they interrupt their treatment based on the time that they were on treatment. And this is the result for the treatment interruption periodically. These patients were on treatment for 100 days at the beginning, depends on when they started on treatment, for 100 days, 300 days, 600 days, or 1,000 days after the seroconversion, and then interrupted the treatment periodically. Like they were on treatment for 5 days and come back to treatment for another 5 days and so on. Or they were on treatment for 30 days and interrupted for 30 days and come back and so on. So the results of these scenarios show that for patients who interrupted their treatment for the shorter period of time have lower chance to, it takes much longer for them to prognose to the AIDS stage compared to the patients who interrupt their treatment for a longer time. And this is the result for the low adherence for patients who skip one dose of treatment every other day, every 4 day, until every 9 days. And it shows that if they start treatment earlier and then skip doses of treatment every like 9 days, 10 days, it takes them much longer to develop to the to prognose to the AIDS stage compared to the patients who interrupt their treatment more frequently. So in summary, we know that HIV positive patients may interrupt their treatment because of the different reasons, like the adverse effects or the treatment fatigue that they get. And now we don't have the good explanation on what happened when patients interrupt their treatment and if it is possible to provide the better care for them if they interrupt their treatment. And the results of our model show that the earlier patients start their treatment and the longer they stay on treatment, it's more beneficial in terms of prognosis to the AIDS stage. And what we are planning to do with this is that there are some patients who come to the clinic, they are not adherent, they may come to the clinic once and then they skip another those refill of their treatment. So what we are planning to do at the HIV clinic is that showing them what happens for them if they interrupt their treatment, like getting their data, simulating their viral load and T-cell counts over time, and providing them information by showing them this is what happens for you if you don't get your treatment or if you interrupt your treatment. So as I said earlier, based on our simulation result, we recommend early treatment as early as they diagnose, and then we don't recommend any treatment interruption. Of course, our study had limitations. We simplified the immune system. We didn't have the CTLs and dendritic cells, which are the immune response and also target cells of HIV. And another limitation that we have in this study is that we don't know when patients exactly interrupt their treatment and when they come back. For patients who are low adherence, we make some estimation based on the days that they get treatment. But if we have better data on the treatment interruption, then we can provide better, more reliable results based on the study. And the next step that we are planning to move forward is that we want to know that what are the impacts of the early versus late treatment initiation on patient survivals, and then use the data of the treatment interruption and treatment and see how the disease gets transmitted into patients through building a multi-scale model, using the results of this study as the immune scale and use it at the population as an input for the population study and study the disease transmission in the population. I want to acknowledge my collaborator at the Sexual Health and HIV Research Team in UK who provided the sample data for us, and also Dr. Conway, who was really helpful with me and the idea that I had to develop it and apply it. So, thank you.
Thank you, speakers on the panel. At this time, we can take questions from the floor. So you can address your questions now. Do I have any questions? Yes? Do we have another question? All right. We go 1, 2, 3.
Yes, Dr. Rosen. So it was 6,000 about people that are turning up positive in the prison, is that right? Every year.
differentiate between the number of new diagnoses, which is related to the total population that passes through the system. Not necessarily, because we don't necessarily have people for the entire year. So I don't actually offhand have the
It seemed like that there was like about 13% positivity rate.
Based on prior work, right?
So if you've got 60,000 coming in, that's going to be somewhere around 6,000. And I guess the question I have is, is the Department of Developmental Hygiene doing a study to see what might happen if you actually do a cure like every single one of those people, you know, coming out of this, you know, and what that would do to the epidemic, say, in a place like New York City. And what's the force of infection for tenants in the city? Like, how many, if you're infected and you don't know, how many people are you likely to infect?
I don't know that the second question offhand. I just think the rate is fairly high, but someone might not be able to answer. It's a fairly infectious virus. You know, probably more infectious than HIV. But with regards to modeling the impact on community health, I think that's exactly, you know, what we would want to see in the long term. I think that, you know, there's often the discussion of jail and prison being an opportunity for public health interventions. While it's true, it's also probably for general diseases may not be the place that we want to focus all of our chronic disease management, but for hepatitis C, as Marge mentioned, the number of people who have chronic HIV or hepatitis C who pass through jail each year is very high. We are now held in hospitals for abortion. We do have colleagues at the Department of Health who have done this type of modeling before. I'm not aware of any particular study that's ongoing right now to discuss what we would do if we treated all these 6,000. But the important thing to remember is that the 6,000 is a chance to identify them. But so many people leave in 7 days, 10 days, that even if we started people with the pill the second day they're in our system, it would be on the community to finish the treatment.
Yes.
So, Dr. Russell, just I have very few jails of any in the country that tried to do what we did. As I'm aware, in fact, you had initiated therapy. It's uniquely stands out in this country so far. There may be others, but not to this scale. How did you get that funded?
It's a little bit above my level, but I know that there has been discussion at OMB levels about additional funding. It's not, you know, this is a proof of concept in a lot of ways where we've got some money and we want to show that we can do it and prove that that we're not causing lots of Hep C resistance out there. But, you know, that's part of what this work is demonstrating that it is possible.
Yes, we had a third question, and then we can come back.
I just had a question about the Hep C program. What do you know, even anecdotal, what the uptake of the rapid Hep C test is?
It's around 40-50%, so similar to our opt-in HIV test.
Yes, go ahead.
Just a short comment and a question. Other than Zach's presentation, three presentations we heard today all demonstrated that that incarceration is not always a benefit. Incarceration interrupts therapy in many of your study group. You demonstrated an adverse effect of interruption of incarceration, and Marge demonstrated that people who had the experience of being incarcerated, which probably resulted in interruptions to incarceration, had an adverse effect. So obviously it means for all of us to decrease the use of jails, particularly pretrial detention, which is a waste of enormous resources for people with HIV. I wonder how we go further with the public health organization to make that point more, you know, to take, just, you know, make the point stronger. It's great to have scientific data on that. Do you know, for example, Zach, I mean, how long does, you know, what is substantial introduction in therapy and action.
So what is the role of treatment interruption for people who pass through?
You know, how long do people get their therapy interrupted when they get busted?
Yeah, so that, you know, I don't have that number offhand. But I know, you know, that's a big challenge. Like, aside from the cost of the drugs, which is tremendous, just getting the expertise on the ground for our intake providers to recognize Hep C, to recognize we have a community fill list, which looks at the drugs that people are prescribed in the community. If they see, not all of our providers know what Harvoni is. So there's a lot of work that goes into to just identifying people who are on.
Much goes that on HIV for you, for that population. How effective is your service at getting people on treatment without interruption?
It's fairly effective, at least while they're with us. We have very good adherence rates. But,
the article showed that when you leave, it's the problem.
Yeah.
And then it'll back up, and that's what that is to.
Which we have, I think, seen. I didn't work on the data, but I've seen CD4. I mean, anecdotally, all the time, I see patients who come into our system very low CD4s that double or triple the profit with us. Mm-hmm. But that's not an argument for incarceration, so I don't mean to I don't mean to make the case for community health in the jail. It's just that this is where a lot of our patients are, and so we want to get them in treatment.
Well, is that part of the movement, you know, the coming together of all the forces that are now saying we maybe should reduce numbers, is one of them at the level of pre-trial, which do you need medical evidence for that? I mean, is that...
No, I can't really understand, but it is definitely a growing notion.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, we do have some trials ongoing in the pre-arraignment setting where before they go in front of the judge, people are arrested by the NPD, and they wait in court before they see the judge and find out if they're coming to jail. So we do have some pilots ongoing in the pre-arraignment setting to... the primary goal is to reduce morbidity of the arrest process because it's a very dangerous time over those what could be up to 3 days prior to getting to the medical intake in the jail system. But part of that work is also identifying when people are sick and if they're obviously with their consent, possibly sharing that with the courts and having the courts sort of acknowledge that maybe jail is not the safest place for this person. Maybe there are alternatives, and that's a big project.
Mm-hmm. Any more questions? I had one for you, Nigel. The study that you've worked on, it's really amazing, the formulas and so. What kind of implications does it have for other studies of hypertension, other chronic diseases? How do you think a mathematical study would work for other chronic diseases?
What I like to think about other non-communicable chronic diseases, I really think that even non-communicable chronic diseases act as a communicable disease. Like if you live in an area that the obesity rate is higher, and if you have people around you who like smoke more than others, there's a higher chance for you to smoke. So if we act in that way, if we see those diseases, then we can apply the impact of different interventions. Like if we control one of them, how it impacts the control of other people in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that it's about people's health by themselves, but it's also about the communities too. Like thinking about how control of one person, like treatment as prevention, as I said,
mm-hmm.
it can act in the big scale too.
Mm-hmm.
But in the details layer, and for different diseases, I can say that it can get applied for other infectious diseases
yes.
too.
Mm-hmm.
But for other chronic diseases, I think I need to. I don't have an answer on top of my head for that. I need to know more about biology. Mm-hmm.
I was curious about the mathematical model
mm-hmm.
of. I don't know if the audience is familiar with this model, but it shows me that there's a lot of scientific work going on, and for future in the future in medicine, we can rely on engineers and other people working in our communities. So, do we have any final questions or? Yeah? Please, go ahead. Okay, I would like to thank the speakers on the panel and the audience. You've been a great audience.